Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. We are here today with our annual panel of students that participated this past summer in the Occupational Health Internship Program, and we're always very pleased to be able to put this session on as part of the Occupational Health and Safety section each year. So it's great to see a nice turnout. My name is Kevin Riley. I work at UCLA. I'm part of a program there called the Labor Occupational Safety and Health Program, and I'll be moderating today. So the Occupational Health Internship Program, or OHIP, is a national internship program. It's now in its 12th year. It's housed at the Association of Occupational Environmental Clinics, AOEC. And the goal of the project is to recruit undergraduate and graduate students who are interested in learning more about worker health and safety issues. The program runs typically through 8 or 9 sites around the country each year. In my role in Los Angeles, I'm the LA site coordinator, so I help to put together projects in Los Angeles and pair students up with organizations there. We also have had, this past year, we had 8 different sites. We had sites in the San Francisco Bay Area, San Diego, Chicago, New York, Boston, New Orleans, and Wisconsin. So we have some of those sites are represented here among the students that will be presenting. And the model more or less operates the same in each of those cities. So we, at either universities or through local health departments, serve as mentors, kind of professional mentors. And students are paired up with local labor unions or community organizations to conduct research projects around health and safety issues over the course of the summer. Often those projects are contributing to local campaigns or other activities that the organizations are engaged in. I think OHIP has been very fortunate over the years also to have had the ability to place students with organizations over multiple years. So students are able to plug into ongoing campaigns, and you'll hear about a little of that from a couple of the projects this morning. So over the last 12 years, we've had over 250 students participating in this project, which is really phenomenal. I think looking back on that, I think those of us who've been involved with running this program from year to year are really pleased with that. Students in place with over 100 projects. And so this year, I think we had 30 students participating in the program, one of our strongest crops as usual. It seems to be getting better and better. We had over 400 students apply to the projects, to OHIP in general, so 30 students out of about 400 applicants. So we'll get to hear a taste of some of the work that was done this summer. I just want to thank some of the major organizations that have funded OHIP over the years and provided funding and support throughout this most recent summer. So NIOSH provides a good chunk of funding for us to support our work. We get funding through CPWR, through the California Wellness Foundation, the Centers for Occupational and Environmental Health, both at UCLA and at UC Berkeley, the SEIU, international and local unions, the Steve Levine Foundation, the Council on State and Territorial Epidemiologists, and anonymous donors who contributed to the program, as well as some of the host organizations that host students throughout the summer. So small funds and other resources are provided through those organizations as well. So I think we thank very much those organizations that have been able to provide the support and ongoing funding for our activities and the work that the students are able to do from year to year. We're always in search of new sources of funding and new sources of support. So if we have generous folks in the room today, or if you are well connected, we would certainly be happy to talk to you afterwards. So with that, I would like to turn to our student presenters. And we've asked each of them to present for about 10 minutes or so. And then maybe what we'll do is we'll hear all the presentations, and then we'll have dedicated time at the end for questions and comments to any of the presenters. Our first presenter today is Citadel Kavasag. Citadel is a PhD candidate in epidemiology at the University of California, Irvine. Currently, her research examines the associations between asbestos exposure and colorectal cancer, and between welding fumes exposure and lung cancer in workers who were employed in the naval shipyards in Long Beach, California between 1978 and 1985. As an OHIP intern this summer, Citadel was involved in a project that examined labor and workplace conditions of domestic live-in caregivers in Southern California. And she hopes to continue her career as an epidemiologist in the occupational health and safety sector when she graduates with Citadel.
Sorry, I'm short. Hi everyone, thank you for being here today. Before I start, I would like to recognize also my OHIP partner, Rita Pitmexe, and she couldn't be here today, but she definitely, her and I did all the work, and most of the work here. So like Kevin said, my OHIP project is in labor and workplace conditions of domestic living caregivers in Southern California. I have no relationships to disclose. So the purpose of the project is to investigate the impact of Filipino domestic living caregivers' work condition in their sleep and overall well-being. We had three objectives. First, this year was a continuation of a project from 2014, so this is actually our second year. And this year we wanted to recruit 30 participants for a research study. In addition to that, we wanted to conduct both quantitative and qualitative analysis of data. The impact that we would like to see happen from this project is that to inform policy regarding social and economic justice for all domestic workers in California. And this policy that I'm talking about is the Domestic Worker Bill of Rights, or AB 241. Currently, AB 241 gives rights to overtime pay to domestic workers and rights to minimum wage. However, it does not give domestic workers the rights to meal or rest breaks. Also, it doesn't also require employers to keep track of those times. As you will see later on in my presentation, our research highlights the lack of meal breaks, rest periods, and sleep in the Filipino domestic living caregivers community, and that we will later demand as basic rights to be reinstated in the AB 241 in 2017. Our host organization is Filipino Workers Center. Is a nonprofit organization dedicated to advocating for and increasing the visibility of Filipino workers and Filipino issues in the community. We work very closely with Lolita, shown there, and she is the associate director of PWC, and she helped us recruit potential participants who were eligible for the study. And these participants have to be ages between 18 to 99 years old and currently working as a domestic living caregiver for at least 3 days per week in Southern California. They have to be Filipino. So our project contains two main phases. The first phase is a 7-day sleep log. So we would meet with the participant and distribute the 7-day sleep log. The sleep log captures their sleep patterns, the meal and breaks that they have during work. It captures both work days and home days. It also captures the quality of sleep that they're having that day or that night and where they're sleeping. After this 7-day sleep log, after 7 days, we would meet with them and do our in-depth interview. In this in-depth interview, we ask them about sleep-related questions as well as work conditions. And the interview usually lasts for 30 minutes to an hour. And for the next couple few slides, the results, we actually had a total of study population of 30 people. In 2014, they were able to recruit 15 who completed both phases of the study. And this summer, we were able to recruit 15, although our goal was 30. Unfortunately, we were not able to reach that. However, we were able to do a lot of analysis here, and the average age is 51.4 years old, 80% were female, and the total average wage per day is 133.75. And so in the next few slides, I will be presenting some of our results. I couldn't present all of them because of time constraints, both quantitative and qualitative. So first off, the total sleep in this population on average are getting 6.4 overall. And when we separate the work days with home days, with the work days, they're getting 6.3 average sleep per night. And at home, they're slightly getting slightly higher sleep. And just below that, I placed actually a code from a participant, which I think really it really reflects most participants what they're experiencing. And this participant stated that when I'm working, or I'm at work, I am always focused 24/7. Sometimes I wake up dizzy, but I still push. So it is very common for participants to say that at work they may be sleeping, but it's interrupted and they have to be always alert even though they're sleeping. For the average total meal break when they're working in a 24-hour shift, the average is 1.1 hour. And so we can see now that is a problematic thing because AB 241 doesn't really give them the right for a break. And one of the participants actually said that you don't have personal time. You are always with the patient. We also looked at where the participants are sleeping during when they're at work and also at home. So what we did is on their sleep log, we aggregated the data for all the 30 people that we got and separated days with home days and work days. So what you're looking here, the percentage is actually days based on the sleep logs. And at home, and you're left, for the most part, majority, almost 85%, let's say that they sleep in the bed at home, and 3% say they sleep on the couch. The other non-specified are those people who didn't answer or they said that they're sleeping in air mattress or a cot bed. At work, almost 50% of the days they're saying that they're sleeping on couch. And then only 36% said they're sleeping on a bed. And we see this all the time with our participants that we interviewed, and it comes with different spectrum. Either their employers doesn't allow them to sleep on a bed, or some of them prefer that they sleep next to their patient, which then results to a couch, and that's what is reflected on the codes below. Okay, and we also looked at the number of sleep disturbances that they experience per night, and majority of the participants experience 1 to 4 sleep disturbances per night, and the code here, I think, really reflects on what most of the participants in our study have been saying. And she said that, what if something happened to the patient? I would be responsible since I'm there at night, even though I'm not supposed to be working. And so even though at night they know that they're supposed to be getting their sleep and they're not supposed to be interrupted, they feel that it's their responsibility to actually attend to their patient because they're there. And so for our recommendation after our study, what we've noticed when we were talking to the participant is that not all caregivers fully understand their rights. And so in the policy now in 2017, we hope that not only we would have plans on how to enforce these rights and make employers accountable for standardizing work conditions for all caregivers, but also have plans on how to disseminate the information to the workers and make sure that the workers really understand their rights. We would also like to examine the role of agencies in caregiving profession. We have noticed that in our population, there were two sets of caregivers. There were ones who were hired with the agencies and the ones who were self-hired. And we have noticed that the work conditions were very different in those populations. And it would be really interesting to see how the agency's role in helping caregivers understand their rights and actually doing that. We also like to see this change in perspective in terms of domestic caregivers. Currently, the caregiving profession is overlooked by labor laws. This profession is not recognized as labor, and that is clearly not true. And our population, when we're interviewing them, they know this. They know that they're not recognized as labor. We would like to see this change not only in California, but also nationwide. And finally, we would like to continue the study to increase the sample size and capture those who are non-PWC members. So PWC really helped their workers understand about their rights. So the work conditions of non-PWC members may be different. Maybe it's drastically different from the ones that we interviewed. So we really want to capture those population as well. And just to end, this is actually one of our workers that we talked to and interviewed, and she was very cooperative and happy, and that's Rita on your left. But The OHIP internship, and if there's students out there, I encourage to apply for OHIP internship because it's very inspiring. I was very inspired and very rewarding at the end. I learned a lot from the workers, just talking to workers. As an epidemiologist, I don't get that chance that much. I always work with data, so it was so great and it was just very inspiring. And lastly, I would like to acknowledge our supporters, OHIP, AOEC, NIOSH, and Filipino Worker Center. Thank you.